WBD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike, and we're really privileged to talk to James Forrester, who's written you get involved in books. I read one of these every week. I try and read at least half of the book. And this one is so exciting, you can't put it down. It's James Forrester's book, The Heart Healers, The Misfits, Mavericks, and Rebels, Who Created the Greatest Medical Breakthroughs of Our Lives. Part of the reason I, of course, was fascinated by it is I lived through it, knowing Paul Zoll and my Boston career as Dr. Forrester did, and then, of course, the greats from the Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Forrester, thanks for coming on, and I've got to thank you for America for writing this book, especially for me, for making my week reading this book just wonderful.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mike, and it's a pleasure to be on with you. And it is a fascinating story, isn't it? I mean, if it was fiction, it would be fascinating. And I wrote it really because of the unbelievable cast of characters, both patients and doctors that I met during this period. And I hope that it'll be of value to the friends, families, or people themselves who have heart disease.
Well, let's go through some of these characters, and I'm going to go through some of them I met, but one of them, you say it started really with, and I love the story of Willie that you have in the prologue, but it started with another, if you will, person, Dr. Harkin in Boston and from Boston. And tell me, so I've always thought that wars create great advances in medicine. And we're seeing that now with battlefield change in battlefield injuries from Iraq, but yes. How we have managed them and all the prostheses that go with them. But let's talk about how World War II changed cardiac care.
Well, Mike, it was the birth of cardiac surgery, strangely enough. And it happened because Dwight Harkin, who was a young Harvard surgeon, very little experience, was sent to London Battlefield Hospital, and there, in addition to the bombs from above and the fires in the streets, he confronted for the first time shrapnel sticking out of the hearts of young soldiers. Imagine yourself in that situation. If you leave it in, the patient's going to get a heart infection, and there was no penicillin at that time, so they would most surely die. But if you put a clamp on it and yanked it out, the patient would bleed to death. And the teaching at that time was that a surgeon should never touch the heart because he could kill the patient in an instant. But Hart decided anyway, and he put a clamp on the shrapnel and poised to yank it out. Imagine yourself about ready to do that. And he yanked it out, and a torrent of blood hit him in the face, and he stuck his finger in the hole, the old finger in the dike strategy, and then furiously threw stitches in, and slowly around that hole he was able to staunch the blood flow. And the only thing that happened is as he tried to remove his finger and withdraw it completely, he found he had sutured his glove to the to the patient's heart. But that patient survived, as did 15 others that he treated the same way, and that was the birth of cardiac surgery.
Now, at the same time, there was a guy named Paul Zoll, who was a cardiologist from Boston, who was involved in that type of thing. What happened there?
Well, Paul Zoll was the cardiologist. Of course, as you and I know, there's cardiac surgeons and cardiologists. Cardiac surgeons do the surgery. Cardiologists take care of heart attacks and so forth, arrhythmias. Well, Paul Zoll was assigned to that same hospital, and he was in the operating room with Dwight Harkin and ultimately became a co-author on the first manuscript that was published about their experience. The reason that it's so fascinating, Mike, is that What happened was that Paul Zoll, who was, I gather, one of your mentors back in years past, became the inventor of the pacemaker.
And at least the way Paul told it to me, so Paul was one of my mentors at Beth Israel Hospital, and we had, at that time, Zoll defibrillators and Zoll pacemakers. He had started a company subsequent to that. But in that era, he shuffled his feet. And his shuffling his feet, he said, generated a spark from his finger that he could actually see went to the heart when, in fact, Harkin asked him to hold the finger in the dike on another patient. That heart was lifeless at the time. It wasn't beating. And I don't know whether this story is correspondence with one of yours or whether it's just something Paul Zoll told us as a fictional story. But anyway, the spark went from his finger to the heart as he was putting his finger in it to hold the finger in the dike, as you said, it with another patient, and lo and behold, it jumped to the metal object, the shrapnel, and it triggered that other heart to start beating. So it was a, if you will, a pacemaker, a rhythm that it gave the pacemaker on the heart, and that patient came back and lived, and that Paul Zoll told us was his genesis of how he invented the pacemaker.
Well, there's a fascinating additional part to that, and that is that the first pacemaker that he developed, of course, was this bulky, huge device, probably the size of a small television set, and he wheeled it up to his to the patient's bedside. The patient was dying of heart block, a heart rate of about 30, and he attached his system to the patient, not knowing whether it would have no effect, kill the patient, or cause the patient to survive. And indeed, the patient survived. But then what happened was that they couldn't...
By the way, I've got to tell you, I've got to just add to that, since it'll add to the book someday, is in fact, he still, whenever he went on rounds, he would bring his pacemaker and his defibrillator with him to do just that, because he believed they had better electrical connections than the other ones available at the time.
Well, he was an interesting character on his own, wasn't he? He was a person who, he was short, kind of big ears, and suffered no fools. He was a Harvard intellectual through and through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what happened was that they couldn't disconnect the patient, so now they had a patient there in the hospital for 5 days, and just pacing away, and how would they ever get the patient to leave the hospital? And his residents started to say, you know, maybe you defied the will of God here. And as it turns out, one of his next patients, fortunately that patient did finally come off the pacemaker, and then he had another one who was a Monsignor in the Catholic diocese there, and subsequently in the Pilot, which is the newspaper of the Catholic diocese, was an article that said perhaps we should not be critical of this young doctor because the ways of God work in mysterious ways. And so he was let off from interfering with the will of God.
Now, when we've been talking with Dr. James Forster, F-O-R-E-S-T-E-R, as you can tell, I'm fascinated. This is a wonderful read, just a great read. The Misfits, Maverick, and Rebels, who created the greatest medical breakthrough of our lives, called The Heart Healers, by Dr. Forster, put out by St. Martin's Press, an outstanding press. The Heart Healers. We'll be right back after the messages you have to hear, but come back because I'm going to talk to him about the Cleveland Clinic's own contributions, Mason Soans and Renee Favolaro, and how they actually helped change things too. And then we'll get to yours if you want. Call us, 844-305-7800. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. This is a great book. Order it at Amazon, The Heart Healers.
There's more. more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. I'm interviewing one of the greats in cardiology, James Forrester, who's written, not only is he great, but the book he wrote, The Heart Healers, is a great book. It's available, of course, on Amazon. It's from St. Martin's Press. And I would guess there's an e-book about it, but I love reading the hard copy. And I'm going to ask him about something that's always fascinated me, because Mason Soans and Rene Favolaro both came from the Cleveland Clinic. I was told they fought like cats and dogs. They were here before my time. So hopefully we're going to get the real story from Dr. Forrester in the book. And by the way, there's great chapters of this in the book, so I know something that we will get. We'll hear about these rebels, I guess you call them mavericks, rebels, and basically they're mischief makers,
yeah.
But who change medicine. Dr. Forrester, tell us about Mason Soans.
Well, I will tell you the truth about Mason Soans. He was back in those days, they had Reader's Digest had a feature they called the most unforgettable character I ever met. And this would be, if they'd asked me to write, I would have written about Mason Soans. He was a character. He drank like a sailor. He cursed like one. He was unpretentious. He was loved shocking people. And he was also a person who, as it turned out, challenged conventional wisdom, although it came about through serendipity. Mason Soans was the guy who invented selective coronary angiography, one of the breakthroughs in all of cardiology. And here's how it came about. He was in the catheterization laboratory, and at that time it was thought that you could not put a catheter into the coronary artery because you'd kill the patient because you'd obstruct blood flow. And so he was injecting contrast X-ray dye into the aorta so that he could see the aorta because the aorta was diseased. And just as he pressed on the power injector of this contrast material, the catheter flipped like a garden hose directly into the coronary artery, and he injected a huge amount of contrast material into the coronary. So he stood there transfixed, thinking that he had killed the patient, and indeed the heart stopped, and then slowly it started beating again. And so what he realized, when he looked, he saw that he had perfectly imaged the coronary artery. And instead of cursing or thanking the gods for his good fortune of the patient surviving, he strode back to his office and bellowed at the top of his lungs, "I just revolutionized cardiology." And legend has it that his long-suffering secretary, Elaine Clayton, looked up and said, "Again?" But he did revolutionize cardiology, because he then developed the whole technique of coronary angiography. And it is the basis of our management of coronary disease today.
And it actually is one of the things that put the Cleveland Clinic on the map, because
Absolutely.
It was then able to develop. And it coupled that, Mason Soans, was coupled with someone quite different, Rene Favolaro. Talk about Rene.
Yeah. Well, Rene was another character, really. He was the person, Michael, that I would say I most admired in my entire time in cardiology. He was a wonderfully principled, an idealist in many ways. He wanted to treat the poor the same as he treated the wealthy. And he was first in his class in Buenos Aires, and then condemned to a rural surgical practice because he had challenged the Argentinian regime at that time, the Peronistas. And he throughout his life, up until his late 30s, he always wanted to do something more than that. So he left his practice in Brazil and came to the United States with limited language skills and no money, and was taken in by Don Effler, who was then the head of cardiac surgery, as a as a laboratory technician, and he was so skilled in the laboratory technician doing the heart surgeries they did in the animal lab, that Effler offered him a cardiology fellowship, and he began then to work with Mason Soans.
By the way, you couldn't do this really easily now. The rules against it are tough now. Regulation on what you can do with people and how you can get them to practice. Mm-hmm. But in the day, this was in the late 60s, you could do this.
That's exactly right. Everything has changed.
So you point that out beautifully in the book, by the way.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you, Michael. And so he, in 1967, he finally figured out a way to bypass the obstructions in the coronary artery that were causing the chest pain on exertion, angina. And Soans then proved that there was a torrent of blood going down that bypass graft, which he had used to treat the patient. It was the beginning of coronary artery bypass surgery. And in the next 3 years, he did 1,000 surgeries with a very low mortality. And he basically created a whole new field. First, Soans creating coronary angiography, and then Favaloro, who created surgery. They did scrap all the time, but they also considered themselves brothers. And Soans died of, being a maverick, of course, he smoked in the cath lab, and he had a sterile hemostat so that he could take a puff in between injections of contrast material. Can you imagine that today? You'd be executed. But he died of lung cancer, and Favaloro came back to be with him in the months just prior to his death.
So Favaloro, in fact, literally revolutionized the field, could have been one of the wealthiest surgeons in the United States, was doing great work at the Cleveland Clinic, treating everybody, but had this belief he wanted to go back to Argentina and serve everyone. So what happened to him?
Well, this is the idealism of Rene Favaloro. He went back and wanted to set up something just like the Cleveland Clinic. And because he was now famous, he could do that, and he raised money to create the Foundation Favaloro. And it fell into trouble during Argentina's economic collapse. He asked for help. He didn't get it. And on a Sunday morning, he walked in and symbolically into his bathroom and symbolically shot himself through the chest. And that was the end.
So again, it was his attempt. And this is what you point out so well in this book, is it takes people who are a little crazy, a little devoted, and really, really innovative, and who can see unbelievable things in accidents that really makes differences. This is a great book, The Heart Healers. You want to read this because we're going to go through some dramatic changes, and you'll see how they're made in the next 10 years. James Forster, thank you very much. This is a book everyone should read just for the fun of reading it, The Heart Healers. We'll be right back with the second hour in a few minutes.